Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Do you feel the electricity?
Oh, boy. That is something else. Yes.
Thank you very much, Tom Curran. Ray, we got to get him back on more often. The two of you are like, it's like the Smothers Brothers. It's beautiful.
Yeah, like firemen and arsonists.
Tom Curran here. Good stuff from him. By the way, Alex Pavlovich is going to be on in an hour from now to get into baseball, the Giants, what they're looking like, what Farhan's doing. He is coming
in. We got the roster.
Are we at 60 or are we still at 51 or 2?
We're still at 51 as far as I know, but something fascinating happened there that I wanted to bring up. I'm sure you guys noticed. Well, you know, we got a few minutes here before we got a break. The only catcher on the actual roster in the 33-man group is Buster Posey, which, you know, we'll ask Alex Pavlovich. I'm not sure how to interpret that, but certainly one potential interpretation is that there is an open competition for the backup catcher spot that might include Joey Bart, who is one of the three catchers on the non-roster invitee group in the club pool.
I think Bart's on the opening day roster.
The only reason not to put him on the opening day roster is if you didn't want to start the clock on him. And I don't know where Farhan is with that, but
that
it is.
It.
But given who the other catchers are in that group, and the other catchers in their deeper minor leagues, Bart is the only logical choice. And again, if he's not there, he's either hurt, he hasn't figured it out to their satisfaction yet, or they just don't want to start the clock on him.
There's nowhere to send him to develop. And then we might not even have minor league baseball. So if you want to get the kid any hacks, they're going to have him at the major league level or not at all. So
yeah,
starting
that's
the
a
clock,
good point.
Starting the clock has a little bit more riding on it now than ever before. What does more to delay the player that you hope to get the most value out of? Denying his starting ticking clock right now and sending him to a year of you ain't hitting nothing but a pitching machine?
Well, and how seriously do you take the idea of competing right now? Because I think he's probably the guy who deserves the job on merit, right?
Having not seen him take a single at bat, yeah, he probably is the third best hitter in the entire organization. That's how bad the hitting has been.
But there may be a judgment, and I'm not trying to argue against Bart being on the 30-man, but they may also decide, you know what, in a 60-game season, starting the clock for this just may not be worth it to him.
You might be right.
It's just a procedural thing. It's not a talent thing. But there are a lot of really good players who got sent down when they shouldn't have been. Well, Vlad Guerrero Jr., you know,
by all rights,
he should have started the year with Toronto. And he didn't because they wanted to save time.
The Cubs did it to Chris Bryant. Somebody gets it almost every single year. What's interesting, though, is on one hand, the 60-game season seems like, why waste it? On the other hand, because of the strange circumstances, it might be the best development work he can possibly get by a long shot. And if that's the case, you might do less damage to his overall long-term development and the value he provides your team over his, you know, affordability years. You might do more damage to it by sending him down than by starting the clock.
If there are no fans allowed in the ballpark, doesn't that buy the Giants time to be patient in a lost year? I mean, think about it. No one's allowed to come in, whether you love the lineup or hate the lineup. You're not buying a ticket anyway. So, why? Yeah, I mean, I don't. Here's the thing. I do know that the Giants would want to put on a show if there were people to watch the show in person. But since there probably isn't going to be a chance of that happening, what's the point in putting on the, well, we got to sell as many tickets as we can? Because people who are going to be sitting on around watching the TV are just going to be watching the TV no matter who the damn hitter is. But am I going to buy the ticket and go to the game if I don't have anyone to watch? You're less likely to. I'm wondering if just the general nature of there is no paying customer, if that wouldn't change the way the Giants do their business, which, I don't know, it's certainly not a compliment to how you go about developing players and doing business, but the Giants are really good at doing business around the players that they do and don't develop, let's face it.
But this does take a fair amount of pressure off Farhan Zaidi and the baseball ops people, mm-hmm. because it allows them to make baseball judgments without sort of the Larry Bear / marketing faction in the room whispering, yeah, but we're only selling 26,000 tickets a game. We got to get, we got to get butts in the seats. And this is a year in which we don't have butts. We got seats. The two will not mesh. We're doing baseball. They're going to do purer baseball this year than they will in any other year, unless the virus runs wild for the foreseeable future. I think this is a free year for Farhan to just look at baseball without anybody going, yeah, we're not moving enough sweatshirts.
All small ball. 2020 Giants. It's a bunt-a-thon. Let's do it, baby. Let's not.
We got to watch that garbage. Come on now.
Wouldn't it be amazing if in the year the designated hitter came to the National League, the Giants still led the league in bunting?
Zig, we zag. Sometimes that's the right way to go.
Hey, they're going to spread it out. Stanford's going to pack it in. I've seen this work before. So when we come on back, a lot more is still on the table. A conversation with Alex Pavlovich coming up at 5 o'clock we're looking forward to. In the meantime, we're looking forward to talking to you. Got a lot of people on the text line saying, hey, man, he hasn't even played in the AAA level yet. Why would you bring Bart up? Well, there is no AAA, AA, single-A level to play in this year, so why not? Someone says, hey, it's a lost season anyway. Why bother? It's easy to see both sides of that argument. Where do you come on down? Start the clock, bring them up, and play baseball? Or wait in a season that was going nowhere anyway? How would you go about it if you were Farhan? 888-957-9570. And speaking of marketing, they just ain't marketing Under Armour quite like they used to, and UCLA might be at partly fault for that, maybe not. We'll talk about how this could apply to Cal. Sports, business, money, marketing, and a failing brand. Believe me, lawyers are coming. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, you're on 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
How about this for a little bit of breaking news in the last few minutes? The NFL has just tweeted the following. Arizona Governor Doug Ducey has ordered bars, gyms, movie theaters, water parks, and tubing? Oh, he means like river tubing, like going out and tubing in a river?
Tub thumping?
Okay. Yeah. I get knocked down, got up again. mass gatherings of 50 or more people are to be prohibited for the next 30 days starting tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, NFL teams are scheduled to open up camp in 29 days. What that means for the Arizona Cardinals, we will find out together. But there you go. Arizona is taking it back. We wonder what this will mean to Florida, to Texas, other spiking COVID-19 states. But Arizona has ordered bars, gyms, movie theaters, water parks, and tub thumping to close for at least 30 days starting tonight. Okay. Well, that's a way to go about it. Another way might have been to not have reopened at all and been 30 more satisfying, healthier days down the road, but we didn't do that. And, gentlemen, I think I do know why. I would not want to take your attention off the show. But if you do follow Rex Chapman on Twitter, he does post some very interesting things, a lot of cute things. The latest video that he just posted, my friends, it is an experiment in why we are in a lot of trouble as a nation. It is a woman pulling up to a gas station to fill her tank up. And the gas is on the other side as she keeps pulling up, and she keeps on pulling up to the same side of the gas station, having it the wrong side as the tank on her car. And she pulls around four different times and then just still doesn't figure it out. She can't figure out that she needs to pull up with the gas pump on her left, not her right-hand side. She pulls up to it being on her right-hand side four different times. She's driving around, and it's as Americana as the picture I'm sure you've seen of the person wearing the MAGA hat on an airplane with the face mask used as a blindfold so they could nap. If that is the picture that encapsulates 2020, I do believe we have just found the video. This woman is old enough to vote. She's old enough to serve on a jury. And she is as dumb, catastrophically dumb, as any licensed driver could be. She can't figure out how to get the gas pump on the same side of her car as the gas tank.
She is wearing a mask, though. So there's that.
There is that. At least we got that.
Respect.
She shouldn't be allowed out in society in any other way. Clearly, she is a non-functioning human.
Well, if this was a quality gas station, somebody would have come out who works there, lifted up the tank or the gas pump, and turned it around physically for her. I think this is customer service.
It's stunning. It's absolutely stunning. The video is... it's a must-see. I mean, it really is.
The only reasoning I could think of is it has to be a rental car, right? Because after your first time at a gas station with a new car, you know what side your gas tank is on.
No, see, the thing about it is anyone who can drive in circles looking for the right side could also be unaware of where their own gas tank is.
She gets out of the car confirming that the gas tank is still not on this side, yet she pulls up four different times to four
That's
different gas pumps.
Doesn't matter whose car you're in at that time. Point.
By the way, every single dashboard, look where the fuel gauge is. There's usually a picture of a gas pump there.
On one side or the other.
And there's an arrow. And the side of the arrow is the side that the tank is on. It's pretty much universal.
In fairness to the lady, you get to be wrong once on this.
Once.
And then it's a matter of spatial physics.
Yes.
This is not nearly as funny, but it may be educational for sports that maybe you might care about more than this. But the Seattle Storm of the WNBA just announced that their head coach, Dan Hughes, is not going to coach this year due to health concerns. His doctor and league officials believe that he's at high risk for COVID-19. And I bring that up, A, because, and it sucks for him, and B, there are NBA coaches and NHL coaches, both head coaches and assistants, who are in that age group, and some of whom may have the similar conditions. So that's something else to keep in mind, that this is not about just, you know, young men who are athletes. This is, you know, guys in their 60s, and on the WNBA side, you know, women of similar age, who are having to make choices.
You know who the oldest coach in the NFL is?
I can't work this year.
Guess who the oldest coach in the NFL is?
Oh, it's Belichick. Belichick.
It's Pete Carroll.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I knew that.
It's Pete Carroll. I mean, there you go right there. And you got one Seattle coach bowing out, Seattle Storm. Wonder what Pete Carroll thinks. By the way, double check that I'm right on that. I think I see you Googling, right? But I do think Pete Carroll is now the oldest.
I think that's right.
The oldest coach in football, not by much over Bill Belichick, and boy, he wears it so much better than Bill Belichick does.
Yeah, he does.
But yeah, I think it's Pete Carroll.
I'm fairly sure you're right about that.
Who is the oldest coach in the NBA? Is it Popovich?
No, I'm sorry. Belichick is older by about 5 months.
Really?
Yeah, he was born in April. Oh, no, you know what? I'm wrong again, because Carroll turned 69 in September. He's 68 now.
Nice.
Belichick turned 68 in April.
Greg Popovich is 69 as well.
Greg Popovich is 69. Who's the oldest coach in hockey?
Oof. Might be Joel Quenneville, but I'd have to look that up.
The name fits the profile. Joe Quenneville's been around the game forever. I mean, come on.
Yeah, he has. He has the mustache of the oldest coach in a sport.
He sure does. So
plus all those years playing for the Hartford Whalers aged him.
This is an element of all of this that we have not even discussed. We've only talked about it from a player standpoint, from a fan standpoint. We've almost forgotten coaches and managers to the man by the name. And it's something else. It's another element that we'll keep an eye on. I wonder what is the compensation going to be for the Storm's coach not participating in the year? Will he make his full salary, partial salary? Is he protected? Does the WNBA have opt-in, opt-out language the way that the NBA has created it? I don't know.
In all likelihood, their language is probably similar, but I think it would be a bad look to just say, by the way, you're not making any money this year.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think I would guess almost every league, as far as I understand it, has created some sort of, you know, if you really ought not be here, protection for people. You know, if there's real medical risk, we're going to protect you financially.
And if the team and the league agree, then he's probably protected. Yep. And the NHL's oldest coach right now, I forgot about him, and shame on me. Dallas Stars head coach Rick Bowness, who is 65.
Wow.
It's pretty young coaching across the board then, right? I mean, is it a young man's game?
I don't know if that's it as much as, you know, you don't get to be that old unless you're incredibly successful.
Right.
Because most owners do the hiring of coaches now rather than general managers. And they always fall in love with the young, dynamic Sean McVay type, you know, rather than the, we've seen him before, he's not ideal, but we'll take him, North Turner type.
Just more and more interesting, getting thrown at sports in its attempt to reopen each and every day. COVID-19 concerns are paramount. People are taking it more seriously, I feel like, this week than in previous weeks, which is good. I would certainly hate to be someone who so decidedly came out against wearing masks, where it now feels like 95% of the people have caught the gist that wearing a mask is as much of an IQ test as it is an actual attempt to prevent germs being spread. And anyone who is reasonable and smart has said, yes, of course, I will do this for a temporary amount of time just to be helpful in the equation. But coaches not being able to go, players not being able to go. Do you start a major league ticking clock on a prospect on the way to a baseball season that might be dead on arrival for a team like the Giants? I wonder if that'll change the way the A's are planning on doing business with any of their prospects.
I doubt it, right?
They've got a lot more on the line this year, don't they?
They feel like as much a championship contender as almost anybody.
They're in some of the best prices on the board in terms of what World Series are you looking at? I got to bring this up. I'll find it eventually. You guys wax on poetic for me.
How do you have the A's handicap right now, Ray?
They're not as good as Houston.
That's fair.
And they're still going to have to use their starting pitchers with a fair amount of care because they're too most intriguing young pitchers, which are A.J. Puck and Jesus Luzardo, both have arm histories already. So I don't think they can just toss them out every 5 days and go, give us seven.
But don't they have the perfect depth for like a six-man rotation? And isn't this the year to try that?
I think it's more likely that you'll have like an 8- or 9-man rotation and that you'll have two or three guys who are just, you use them the way you use starters. And then the rest of the time, you may go openers.
Okay.
And they might be different openers given whatever team you're playing.
And essentially keep, maybe even have those young guys as sort of like super duper long reliever guys?
Well, I think Puck would fit that way more than Luzardo would. I think Luzardo was one of those guys they look at and go, this guy's a guy who's we expect him to go seven every time out because that's how good he is and that's how good we believe he is. Puck, I think, could be more of a sort of a swing guy. And if you're going to swing him, I don't think you use him as an opener. I think you'd use him, you know, sort of as, maybe as an eighth inning guy or a seventh inning guy or a, oh, my God, the game's going to be decided in this inning guy, which means he could go at any point from the sixth on.
When it comes to representing the National League in terms of predict, according to Vegas, your most accurate World Series matchup, best chances of having it, the Los Angeles Dodgers are the chalk in the National League. There is no team that is listed more as a frequent World Series participant in terms of eventual matchups. Here's the value on the board. Yankees-Dodgers is going off at 11-2. Astros-Dodgers goes off at 14-1. Twins-Dodgers is 21-1. And then you have the Oakland A's appearing on the list for the first time. A's-Dodgers is 24-1, as is Rays-Dodgers going off at 24-1.
Well, the Dodgers have always been Las Vegas's favorite team. So that's not surprising.
Well, they
because they always get the they all, you always get bad prices on the Dodgers in Vegas, even when they're not this good. And the only team that is more popular in Vegas than the Dodgers is the Lakers. And you always get bad prices with them. I think third now is probably the Golden Knights, and maybe fourth is the Raiders. But a lot of L.A. transplants go to Vegas to do their big betting. And so they're going to bet the home side a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. Nevertheless, like, the A's are getting decent respect right now, and I think for a good reason. And that can matter, especially in a season where nobody has to apologize for an empty ballpark.
If you're comfortable or used to playing in front of small crowds, maybe that's an asset this year, right?
Definitely could be, right? Why not?
We're talking about teams that are going to Orlando in the NBA where, you know, players might be more inclined to play better in a quieter, less NBA arena-ish type of scenario, especially when you're talking about role players going out on the road or a team like, man, who are we talking to last week who brought up the Philadelphia 76ers as a team that is very, very interesting to keep an eye on going to Orlando because the 76ers at home were incredibly tough to beat. On the road, they played like a lottery team. So you take them out of hostile arenas. Maybe you take a team like the Houston Rockets out of the pressure of a huge performance in front of the home crowd at Toyota Center. And like we said, they don't miss 27 threes in a row. So it will be fascinating to see which teams react and respond to elements and environments that are going to be so incredibly strange for the vast majority of teams. But the A's are sitting there, an outlier. They really are. It will be interesting.
Yeah, the thing they have to overcome is the fact that Houston, you know, without people in their grill work every day, can go out and be the best baseball team because they have the best players. And the only question about the Astros is not having Gerrit Cole. Everything else about them is pretty well loaded. And they have a lineup that does not possess a single out in it.
Especially if you have trash cans.
I do think there's some variability there, even without fans. I'm not by any means saying, oh, these guys are only good when they've got trash cans getting banged. But the A's were not that far off last year. And just the simple every year changes in player results could dictate the A's lineup being nearly or just as good as the Astros lineup this season. And especially in a 60-game season, especially with, I think, the depth that the A's have in a lot of places. No, they don't have the same wealth of established names, but there's a lot of possibility on this roster, man, and I think that's all the more tantalizing in the short format we're getting.
The quick start, the slow start, these are going to be crippling or huge advantages to teams. It's really, I mean, you get off to a bad 20-game start, that's a third of the season now. That's you're done. Yeah. You can bury yourself with a, you know, with a 3-10 start. You're dead. And it's just going to be amazing to see it happen. And I'll say this. This is how addicted to baseball I really am. I know that I spent many days in the last few weeks telling you, I really don't care. I don't care about baseball. I'm not happy at all. I'm opening up rosters. I was looking at teams this
summer. I wish I could quit you, baseball.
Seriously, it's like that. I can't quit you. It is. I'm angry. I'm not happy. You're going about it the wrong way. I think that changing the game so dramatically is an odd thing to do. I'll tell you, the runner on second and extras pisses me off, I think, as much as anything. And I think that that should directly affect the ticket price. Here's the deal. You want to make the argument pitchers can't hit, have a damn DH in the National League. I hate it, but I'm not going to say you have no basis for your argument. You do. I get it. I do think that every single major league ticket should cost instantly 20% less across the board, because you're now not offering me a purchase price that could provide me 12 hours of entertainment. You're not. Baseball is now implementing a cutoff line of the time you might spend in the ballpark like never before, and the unknown time I'm going to spend in your ballpark, I always thought was weirdly built into that ticket price. Now, sometimes you get a really quick game, 1-0 pitcher's duel, and you're out of there in an hour and 45 minutes, and you're looking at each other going, wow, that was great, but you're also saying, geez, I wish we could have been at the ballpark a little bit longer. And then you have the extreme pendulum swing of a 17-inning game, and I don't think anyone wants a ton of that, but someone does, and someone's more than willing to be in there. And I really, if you're telling me that this doesn't go to infinity anymore, my ticket price should reflect that.
It's the thing where even if you don't necessarily want to be at the ballpark for 5 hours when you show up on a Friday night, there's something tantalizing and important about the possibility that it might happen.
They always say about the sport of baseball, you know, tonight you might see something that's never happened. And God bless this sport. It does provide that. It really does. You'd think that every single scenario that could ever be explored in a baseball game has happened multiple times, much less never before. You know, it's of course it's happened. Well, one of the ultimate you never knows is you never know when this game is going to end. That's one of the ultimate you never knows. What is the major league record for extra innings? What is it?
26.
26. Okay. That record has a better chance of falling than Ted Williams' single season average.
Well,
maybe not
maybe
this
until
year.
Until now.
So this one doesn't count. But you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, or DiMaggio's hit streak, right? Certainly, that it'll be harder to break the hit streak than the extra inning record.
And the truth is, those marathon games happen so infrequently that there is a novel charm to them. It's not like this happens three times a week that teams go 17
right.
innings. You know, it's basically saying the games are too long, so let's take the extreme. Well, no, you don't take the extreme. You try to tighten up every game, because if all you really wanted to do was cut down on game times, you would simply ban the Yankees and Red Sox from ever playing again.
Certainly on Sunday Night Baseball. I mean, God.
Yeah, or just anytime. I mean, they are the masters, the undisputed masters of the four-hour, nine-inning game.
You talk about
and
how,
in a game that's not like 15-14.
Right, but
Four hours on a 5-3 game one night.
Sure. So you talk about it's so infrequent that there's almost some novel charm to it. I got to tell you, one of the most delightfully disoriented I've ever been in my life without ingesting anything. You know, one of the most delightfully disoriented. What is happening? What time is it? Is it AM, PM? What? It was like 5-6 years ago. The A's played, I think, a 17-inning game. And I fell asleep on my couch at about 11:30 with the A's game on. And I wake up, it's 1 o'clock, past 1 o'clock in the morning, and I look up and I figure, okay, so CSN Bay Area must be in the replay right now. What inning are they in? And I look at them, it's like 16th inning, 17th. Is this game still live? It's happening? Oh my God, I can't believe this game's still on, and it's 1:30 in the morning. What the hell? And I remember just not knowing what day it was, what time it was, morning, noon, night. I mean, like, it was so disorienting, and I didn't go to bed. Once I waked, I had to watch the end of that. We ain't going to get that anymore, at least not this year. I hope this rule is temporary. I really do.
I do, too, because, and I don't know, have they said whether this will happen in the playoffs or not? Because this is even more of a travesty.
They said it will not happen in the playoffs.
It will not happen in the postseason.
Okay, well, at least that's a small mercy.
Isn't that admission that you know you got a bad rule?
Yes.
Hey, when the games really freaking count, we promise not to do this. But
exactly.
In the meantime,
you know it's not going to be good. You know it's not fair or reasonable. And that's why it's not in the playoffs. So why do it? And hey, it's not going to make a difference that often, right? There just aren't that many regular or extra inning games in general. And especially in a 60-game regular season, like who are you saving here? And what are you saving us from?
When we come on back, we got some business troubles for Under Armour that are going to directly affect one, if not two, Pac-12 schools. We're going to come back talking about that. And at 5 o'clock, Alex Pavlovich all over the Giants' start to the baseball season today. One of their top prospects testing positive for COVID-19. The countdown is on to the Bay Area's 10 greatest athletes of all time starting Monday. We want you to submit your top 10 list to 957thegame.com. Tune in all week. We're going to be breaking it down. We're going to be arguing with each other about everyone's list. We will determine the grand daddy list of them all, and we will have that all for you. It's going to be a fun little you choose it, we choose it, we all figure it out. One big group think together. It starts on Monday, July 13th. And we look forward to your input, and we're going to have some fun next week with that, I can promise you. Alex Pavlovich at 5 o'clock. Don't you go anywhere. Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full-service banking, no compromises. Joining us at the top of the hour, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. We are just starting our longest commercial-free segment of the day. It is good to have you here, Damon Ratto and Kolsky on 95.7 The Game. Gentlemen, in sports business news, UCLA got hit with a little bit of a doozy this weekend. Under Armour wants to pull out of a massive apparel deal with UCLA, and Cal could be next. The one thing I can promise you is that lawyers are coming, and that Dan Guerrero picked the right year to walk away. He's been UCLA's long-time serving athletic director, and he's got a football team that's burning down. He's got budgetary problems that are officially world-class, and this is not going to help that, because Under Armour signed a 15-year deal back in 2016 with UCLA, making Under Armour the exclusive outfitter with all the perks and facility upgrades that come with it. A 15-year contract, by the way, is a major, major transaction. That is a budget that is to be counted on for the foreseeable future. Well, Carly Porterfield of Forbes.com writes, Under Armour is now looking to bow out of the $280 million partnership with UCLA, which at the time and is the biggest deal in American college sports history, as both an athletic wear and a university athletic department face financial problems that get exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic. That was on Saturday, and the news, I guess, is trickling to Berkeley, where Cal has a 10-year, $90 million deal with Under Armour that they also agreed to in 2016, and Cal is bracing itself. Cal has already put out a press release saying, hey, we're doing our end for Under Armour, and they're doing a great job holding up their end of the bargain, too, and we hope that this relationship goes forward. Under Armour's trying to make the case, UCLA is such a disastrous athletic department right now, it's not holding up its end of the bargain. They are dying on the vine as a company. And, oh, by the way, when they thought that they were going to be the chief advertiser in the Rose Bowl, they didn't think Chip Kelly would be drawing 16,000. They thought 100,000 eyeballs would be on the product. So not good if you're UCLA.
Well, also the basketball team has fallen on hard times. So the legal the stories about this that I've seen that have been written by sort of legal experts as opposed to sports writers all seem to agree that Under Armour has not come close to proving its case. That basically what it looks like they're trying to do is force a drastic downward renegotiation because it doesn't look like they can get out of the contract unless UCLA suddenly stops participating in men's or women's basketball, men's football, or I think men's baseball or softball. So that basically, if any of the core sports at UCLA no longer are, if they folded any of those, then Under Armour might have a case. But under the way the language is written, that's about the only way they could get out.
My understanding is that that seems to be the case for everyone who's trying to get out of things, unless you specifically have a force majeure clause, right? I mean, legally speaking, no one gets to say, oh, man, we didn't see the pandemic coming. Let's cancel this contract, unless both sides agree or there's a clause in the contract specifically for major world events like this. And I think that, you know, that's what we're looking at here.
Wimbledon and the British Open didn't bother with any rescheduling or any nonsense like that because they did have the best force majeure clauses in all of sports written into their contracts. And that's why they quickly and easily canceled without even thinking about it. There was no debate. Let the insurance money come in and pay for it all. We have the clause written in. That is some good thinking. And that thinking wasn't applied to an awful lot of the contracts that we're looking at right now. What a staggering decline for the brand, both Under Armour and UCLA. What huge hits both brands have taken. But for Under Armour, it is really something else because I did think, and I'd like to think that I am tough to fool on this, but I really did think that Under Armour was as set up to compete with Nike, Adidas, the big boys, as any brand introduced in my lifetime has ever been. I mean, Big Baller Brand was the most dead-on arrival thing of all time. You could see that one not happening before it even didn't happen. Where Under Armour looked like they had gear that people liked. It was embraced by the football community first and foremost, which is huge in terms of apparel. They were trying to be that other brand. They weren't trying to be the brand. And they found their own sort of niche with all the hydrowear and the body sweat separation stuff that Under Armour staked its own entire claim in before it even got into the we're going to make sneakers, we're going to be an outfitter from head to toe apparel company, when they were just that sweat gear and, you know, T.O. was running around in skin-tight Under Armour in winter conditions in Philadelphia. You'd think, man, that's some good advertising for a brand that is going to be big, is going to be real big. And then they sign Steph, and Steph's career takes off like a rocket ship. They signed Jordan Spieth. They signed Bryce Harper. Like, all of the about-to-be name-brand entities in sports were leaning towards Under Armour. It seemed set up to be a success. They were opening up flagship stores on Chicago's Magnificent Mile in New York. I was surprised that we never saw one in San Francisco with Steph Curry and Buster Posey being signature athletes. But it's not going to happen. And, guys, I looked at this morning in 2016. When Under Armour agreed to this, their stock was trading at $84 a share. This morning when I checked, Under Armour's trading at $9.23 a share. That's a big fall, man. That's big. And, you know, Curry obviously isn't going anywhere, no matter how bad it gets, because he's got a big equity stake in the company that back in 2016, people were saying could have been worth up to $14 billion. I wonder what that looks like now.
About one fourth of what it is. The problem that Under Armour had, and it was inescapable, is that they weren't trying to be Nike because they couldn't spend with Nike, and they weren't even trying to be Adidas. But the problem is that's where the breakoff line was. They were trying to carve a third piece out of a two slice pie. And they ended up with largely either devalued contracts like UCLA, which was sort of an afterthought for Adidas, you know, because they've never been a huge money generator, or places that had never had a big money contract before, and they overpaid for them so that they could roll with the big boys faster. And the problem was, in time, they realized that they weren't going to get any Nike schools or any Nike properties. And Adidas had, you know, a lot of Europe wrapped up, so that they were fighting for sort of scraps with, you know, Puma, people like that. And there's no money in that. You either have to go after the big guy and be willing to spend with the big guy, or you better find your niche and stay in it.
I mean, they signed didn't. Notre Dame. I mean, Notre Dame, they're the official outfielder of Notre Dame. It doesn't get much bigger than that.
No, but yeah, I mean, but Notre Dame does not generate the level of money that most of the SEC schools do, most of the Big Ten schools do. Notre Dame is the kind of one-off where you go, yeah, we can be players, but it.
Ooh, Ray's microphone.
I think we lost Ray.
It must be an Under Armour microphone.
Hello, there you are. Go ahead.
You have to swing for the fences, and Notre Dame is no longer the highest fence in college anything. In large part because they don't want to do join a conference and share what they think is a ton of money that they're pulling in, and maybe that works mathematically for them, but the fact is, the power in college sports has shifted southward and toward the Midwest. And because they don't have a Midwest link up, namely they're not in the Big Ten, they're not in the Big 12, they're certainly not in the ACC. They're in the ACC for basketball, but you know, they're sort of an island, and they're not really a player in the way that Texas is or Oklahoma is or Clemson is now, or Duke. I mean, they're not in that group anymore.
They're a 12-win season away from being the biggest team in college sports again. That's all Notre Dame is.
This series, Notre Dame is one rebirth season away from being the lead story for the entire sport. That's all. Notre Dame is the biggest of all sleeping giants, and it has been sleeping for a while.
But they're not the point, right? I mean, the point is, whether it's Notre Dame, Steph Curry, is Tom Brady an Under Armour athlete? I mean, they have invested. They have invested in all these guys and schools and so on. And if Ray is right, it hasn't really mattered because there's sort of there's two kings in the game of shoe business and apparel business that sort of aren't in any danger of getting caught right now. And I'm not sure, you know, it seems to me Under Armour did everything they could to dive into that pool. And I don't know the numbers, but if Ray is right that they were still swimming in the shallow end after all these years and all these investments, then it may be the pandemic that really broke them. But if they were still in the shallow end at this point, I'm not sure how much chance they ever had of swimming with the big boys.
Alex Pavlovich will be joining us.
Their stock price was already on the way down before the pandemic hit. The math didn't work anymore.
Oh yeah, no, they squandered a huge opportunity. They probably spread themselves way too thin, and they jumped into a sneaker game that they weren't ready to run in that race. If they had just stayed who they were with the other apparel, they'd probably still be thriving in many ways. They might not have grown to the level that they did, but they wouldn't be falling apart to the level that they are. Cal, like I said, let's bring it back to the local angle before Alex Pavlovich joins us for the local angle that is the San Francisco Giants in just a moment. Adam Rittenberg from ESPN had a statement from Cal Athletics on the situation of their status with Under Armour. And I say this with great confidence. There are very few athletic departments in the nation who are more struggling to have every dime committed to them come in and hit the bank account like the way Cal's athletic department is structured and run. They are on the thinnest of margins at all time. And the statement from Cal is, while we understand that we are in challenging times, we have been and remain committed to our partnership with Under Armour. We are confident that we are fulfilling the terms of our agreement and that Under Armour does not have grounds for termination. And we know that Under Armour has put years into building its college business, and we have done and will continue to do everything in our power to help them succeed. Cal Athletics remains steadfast in its commitment to its support of its student athletes with the apparel and footwear they need to train, compete, and succeed in their chosen athletic fields. In other words, hey, you know all the stuff that you're complaining about, what you're not getting from UCLA? Well, you are getting it from us. You didn't invest nearly the amount of money that you're losing down there now. So we like you. You like us. Let's stay together. Let's keep that going, because Cal 100% needs every nickel of the 10-year,
we expect our shoes
million.
To arrive as planned.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. And by the way, we expected Yes, Ray?
No, go ahead. We're up against it. Let's do this.
I was
this.
About to say, we expected our 5 o'clock hour to arrive right here.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
We'll get back to Cam Newton dabbing in Foxborough in just a little bit, but it's time to talk some baseball, and it's time to say hello to Alex Pavlovich for the first time in a long time, Giants insider for NBC Sports Bay Area here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Alex, hopefully you and the family have been well. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Doing very good. Thank you so much. It's good to have you on today. Talk a little baseball, which a couple weeks ago, that wasn't guaranteed. It didn't look like it might not have happened, but indeed it is. Thank you for picking up the phone. Let's start with Hunter Bishop, who has tested positive for COVID-19. Alex, do you have any details about his symptoms or how he's feeling or where he is in the process, or did he just test positive like yesterday?
No, it was last week. He's doing really well. I mean, this is something that he's not, you know, obviously there's concern with everybody, but I think all things considered, he's doing well. The symptoms are really minor.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.